Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Quarter Life Queen podcast. In this episode, I'll be having a conversation with Ruelin Arulanundam, who is a recent graduate of St. Louis University and studied public health, and also served as the Student Government Association president, and is now going on to her first year of law school at the St. Louis University School of Law. But aside from her accolades, Ruelin is such an amazing person who has such a strong faith and mature outlook on relationships, on work, on theology, and everything in between. So I'm so excited for you to hear from Rue and enjoy our conversation. Well, welcome Ruelin to the Quarter Life Queen podcast.
Hi.
And so I have to start out by just saying how we met, how we know each other.
This is an awesome story.
So, you know, Rue and I both went. Wow, we're literally alumni these days.
Yeah.
To St. Louis University, which is a Catholic school. So we both found ourselves in groups of friends that were predominantly Catholic. And I would joke that I was like the Protestant queen of my friend group, which I guess carried on to the later generations.
You started a trend.
Slew. And so, or actually, I think that maybe somebody referred to a girl that was a year older than me as a Protestant queen.
Oh, yeah.
So I was driving with one of my friends, and I was at a stop sign on campus, and Rue came up to my car and said, "Oh my gosh, you're Susie, you're the Protestant queen of the juniors," or whatever it was, and yeah. "I'm the Protestant queen of the sophomores," and I was like, great!
And that's how we met.
And that's literally how we met.
And then she was like, "I have to go, like, I'm at a stop sign."
Yeah, that's so true. There was, like, probably someone behind me.
Probably.
Yeah, and so I feel like I just kind of knew who you were, like, going forward.
That's pretty much a good introduction.
Yeah, we just had a lot of mutual friends.
Yeah.
But then we went to DC together.
Yes.
For a trip that was sponsored by SLU. And I'll just like come out and say this. But something I'll always value, and it'll always like very much shape the way that I think about you, is while we were in DC, we went to Passion City Church, which was lit. It was so fun. And the sermon was very convicting for me personally of, like, a sin that I was struggling with. And so we went back to our hotel, and we literally skipped out on an entire, like, session for the conference that we were in. And I'm just sitting in the hotel lobby crying. You, like, hardly know me, and just, like, confessing this to you. And you were just so wonderful and just, like, did not judge me at all and were so encouraging to me. And I just think that's so special, that in an opportunity where you could have, like, judged me, you could have, you know, condemned me, or, you know, what I was doing was wrong, but, like, you met me with love, and, like, I feel like that's so just characteristic of who you are.
That's so sweet.
Thanks for that.
What's crazy about that trip, too, is I went on that trip literally 2 days after a breakup.
Really? Was that soon?
Yes, like, so soon, and I remember being, like, I'm not in the mood to, like, talk about it or like talk to people, especially like explain it, because it was kind of like a complicated situation. And I remember like that was the first time we really hung out, and like I was amazed by how comfortable I was talking about it with you.
Yeah,
like, and there was just like this understanding of like, I know she's gonna get it and like understand where I'm coming from. And likewise, it was like there's no judgment here, it was just like my feelings, and it was met with so much grace, so right back at you, girl.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, that's so sweet. And I feel like that speaks to the church, you know?
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
No matter what background or what prior relationship that you have, like, it should always be a safe place to confess. Like, there is freedom in confession. And also just having that empathy for one another. But something that I've been, like, asking going into our time together is, take me back to when you were about 19 or 20, which was probably like 2 years
literally
ago.
Last year.
And kind of like, what was your, like, where were you at in life, and what was your perspective like going into your 20s, or kind of what did you expect from this time in your life?
Yeah, I feel like going into, and again, being, you know, I'm 21, so like very to say I'm in my 20s still feels like it's fake. It's hard to like realize that I'm there, but I feel like going into it, I already felt really behind.
Yeah,
like in so many ways, like relationally, or like I didn't completely know what I wanted to do, or, like, I had some vision, but, like, I felt like people who were, like, a few years ahead of me had way more vision for their life, or, like, they had a lot of things financially together or socially together or whatever, or even spiritually, like, they seemed like they knew who they were, and yeah. I felt like that wasn't me. Like, I was, like, I had really great, I still have great friends, but, like, I was still very much figuring out who I still am figuring out who I was, and, like, what, yeah, like, I think just, like, being secure in myself, I think, like, my journey with, like, insecurity and pride has just been, like, very long, and attempting not to mold myself to the people around me was always really difficult, and so going into my 20s, I was trying to, like, break out of the, like, conception that there is a path that's, like, paved out for us. In the sense of, like, you should be hitting this milestone by this age or whatever. And, I mean, it sounds corny, but I'm, like, we make our own path. Like, I honestly believe that, like, the Lord creates our paths for us. And so learning to trust that was difficult while still, like, having peers around me who were just, I felt, like, way ahead of where I was.
Yeah, so. I'm actually, I guess I knew in the depths of my brain that you're 21, but you honestly do seem so much older, because I do feel like you just carry yourself in a way that is very wise and confident, but, you know, you just admitted that that isn't something that's always come easy for you. So kind of what has that journey been like for you in growing in your confidence in the path that you're on?
I think that I mean, it sounds counterintuitive, but I think the biggest thing that's helped my journey, well, two things. I think first of all is realizing, like, how small I am. Like, I think that once you admit that to yourself, like, I think so much changes. And for me, it's very much like recognizing how small I am, and how big God is, and, like, how I'm not the center of everything, I think is one thing. The other thing has been therapy. Being able to, like, talk it out with somebody, and just, like, sometimes it literally just takes saying something out loud to be like, wait, that was, that's not normal, or, like, that's stupid, or whatever.
Recognizing the pattern, I think.
Recognizing your own mental patterns, and being able to, like, come up with a solution for how to prevent a negative pattern from happening again. So I'm a big fan of therapy, highly recommend it to anyone, but yeah, I think those have been the two big things, that have really, like, impacted my growth.
And, you know, that all kind of boils down to your faith and, like, that foundation. I actually don't really know what has been, like, your faith journey.
Well, I used to, this is actually such a funny question, because I used to hate it, because, I feel like my, like, quote-unquote testimony was always really boring. Like, I always was like, ugh, like, I remember as a kid, I grew up in church, and, like, baptism Sunday, like, I would love it because I would get to hear, like, stories of people. And part of the comparison factor is, like, oh my gosh, like, that's not what my life looked like, and that's not what my growth has looked like. But I think only recently I've been learning, like, almost what a gift that is. Like, not that my life is boring, but, like, that the Lord has worked in really small ways that have impacted me really greatly. But it might not seem that, like, remarkable to anyone else, if that makes sense. So, that didn't answer your question. But to answer the question, I grew up in church, and with, like, parents who just really prioritized faith in my house. I was discipled really well in high school. Like, music has always been a huge way for me to experience my faith and to live it out. And I was really mentored by somebody in high school who challenged me a lot in my faith, and then also, like, really encouraged me to lead in the space of music. So, like, that's typically referred to as, like, worship ministry or whatever. And then college was really hard for me. I think, like, after COVID and just seeing, like, the world, it felt like break apart. There's a lot of stuff that was happening in my family too, like, two of my grandparents passed away. And so there was a lot of just, like, brokenness, and for me, when I looked at the church, I was like, yeah, I don't love what this looks like right now. And it was really hard for me to reconcile that Christians could look at a God in such different ways.
Yeah.
And could live that out in such different ways. So I went through a period for sure, like in college, just like not having any intimacy with God and my faith, like at all. Like I was literally going to church because my parents would call and ask me, and I like didn't want to lie to them. So I would go and like basically zone out. And then I think it was my sophomore year of college. I was pretty much ready to like throw in the towel, and I was really over it. And living in a way that I was just like, oh, I'm like pretty content with my life, and like, although I will always have like God to go back to, but I'm not really interested in like the church or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And someone invited me to like one church, and somebody that I didn't really like know that well, but I was like, okay, whatever. It's it's one more Sunday. I've been doing it my entire life. I can do it one more time. And I loved it. And the church that I went to and I still go to is like, the only way I know how to describe it is it was an answered prayer to the prayer I never said out loud.
Yeah.
Like, it was, so like, the people and what they prioritized and the way that they lived out their faith was, like, the hope that I really needed in that moment of, like, okay, there are people who do this well and who reflect the Jesus that I really want to worship. And there was a lot of diversity. Like, it wasn't, like, everybody thought the same way or lived that out in the same way. But there was a sense of unity that I think I just hadn't had or, like, hadn't seen a lot of.
Yeah.
And then crazy, like, aftermath of that was that I went home and I told my roommate about this cool church I went to. And she was Catholic, so she was like, cool.
Word.
And we realized that literally a year before, my roommates and I took a picture in front of the church.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and we, like, it was, like, there was a cool backdrop or something. We were like, oh,
the
this
mural
is so cute.
Something. Yeah.
Yeah, it was, like, a sign that said, we are family. And we were like, ah, ha, ha, girls' night. We are family. And so it was just cool because it was, like, okay, a year in advance, like, the ward knew that I was going to be here.
Yeah.
And that this is when I needed to be here.
That's so good.
So it was just a cool, like, testimony of his faithfulness. So... yeah, and since then, I mean, I have not been a perfect Christian by any means.
Right.
Like, still struggle with a lot of sin and am learning to confess that and be just learning to accept the Lord's grace in that. But I think, like, spiritually, now it's, like, the best I've felt, which is such a cool feeling. So
that's so sweet. Oh, I love that. And there's, like, so many things I could say. I think, for starters, a lot of people who grew up in the church have that line of, I have a really boring testimony.
Yeah.
And I remember being at a camp and there was a speaker kind of reflecting on that. And he said, there is nothing boring about going from death to life.
Yes.
And having, you know, being blessed in the way of growing up in the church and kind of having that understanding your whole life, that's a testimony of generations before you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, for me, I want my kids to be able to say that they had a boring testimony because that reflects the way that you were raised and just the work of your parents. And I know your parents and they're literally so awesome. I love your mom. We're friends on LinkedIn. And I also think that it goes to show that when you do know the Lord from a young age and you follow him and you seek him and pursue him, like, you will experience blessing in your life. And that's not to say you're not going to experience hard things too, but that's a reflection on other people of, oh, when you actually walk or toward other people, when you walk that out, your life looks different than if you hadn't had that from the beginning. So I think that's really sweet.
Yeah.
And it's also interesting how you did kind of come to this point where you were wrestling with the church and thinking, like, how can people who believe in the same God see him so differently?
Yeah.
But I think that it just took a change in perspective.
Yes.
Because now, at the church you go to, I think a lot of people probably see God in some different lights.
Yeah.
But that's also a really beautiful thing because
100%.
I feel like, at least in my experience, in my walk with the Lord, there's been seasons where he's taught me something very specific about his character.
Yeah.
You know, for example, I feel like something I've been learning a lot recently is, like, through, like, Psalm 23, like, the Lord is our good shepherd, and he's also, like, our safe place, like, a hiding place.
Mm-hmm.
And if I share that with someone, they might not have really known that about God. Or, you right. know, somebody might share with me, like, oh, that's great. But I've really been learning about God, that he's a provider. And, like, he's provided for me in, like, these crazy ways. And yeah. so sometimes having different views or things, I guess not views, but perspectives on the Lord's character can be really helpful. Because yeah. they can illuminate something about him that you didn't really know before.
Yeah.
Obviously, there could also be instances where that's problematic and more of like a doctrinal basis of people seeing God differently. But I think that just challenges you to be really firm in your theology and your foundation.
Yeah. yeah.
To where you can hear somebody's, you know, take and listen to it and learn from it and understand, yeah. but maybe not directly apply that yeah, to your life. Yeah.
And it's so interesting you say that, because I was literally telling somebody this the other day, like, something I'm trying, and I tried to do the past 2 years or so, is, like, every year I'm trying to, like, commit the year to learning about a specific characteristic of God.
Yeah.
And so, like this year it's learning about God as Father.
Yeah.
And what that looks like. And I think now, like, I'm so appreciative of the different perspectives of Christians that they have about what that looks like to them. And 2 years ago, I would have wanted everyone to think about it in the same way.
Yeah.
Right. And like, yeah. I love that about the church now. Like, and I think it's exactly to your point. Like, I think the things that bothered me were like righteous things to be angry or frustrated about, maybe, but now I think like the Lord has really healed me and done a lot of work. And so, like, while things can be frustrating, there's also a lot to learn from it. And like,
yeah.
learning about God as Father through people who I agree with and disagree with is like one of the coolest things to me.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I think it challenges you to listen, because yes, even if you think yeah. about the disciples, you know, there was a zealot. They yeah. have a completely different perspective on who the Messiah is going to be. There were devout Jewish.
Yeah.
boys that grew up in Judaism, and so they had
tax collector
yeah. you know, eventually there would be Gentiles, people yeah. who didn't know anything about the Jewish faith at all, but, you know, became a Christian. And so, you know, these people are going to have completely different takes of
yeah
like who God is, who God has been to them, who Jesus is, what the Messiah was supposed to look like.
Yeah.
But there's beauty in that, because they all were together and they yeah. all got to bring those experiences collectively and unlearn and relearn
yes,
who
yeah.
who God really is together. Yeah. And so yeah. I think that that's a challenge that we can face today, is we all have our experiences with the church.
Yeah.
We all have, like, specifically if you're thinking about God as a Father, we all have different relationships with our fathers.
Yep.
And so that's going to affect how yeah, we view God
exactly.
as a Father.
Yeah.
And so getting to listen to one another and hear those things can be so strengthening and, like, so powerful for your faith.
Yeah. And I think that, like, speaking of the disciples, like, one of the biggest lessons I've learned about that is that you can't unlearn and relearn in isolation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think, like, I spent so much time trying to do that and being like, oh, I can just figure it. Like, I can have my own relationship with the church or God. And it was exhausting.
Yeah.
Like, it's so exhausting to try and, like, intellectualize everything on your own and,
yeah.
and figure out what you believe and all that kind of stuff. And the church has been so helpful in that of, like, okay, I'm not alone in doing this.
Yeah.
And that there are people who understand my relationship with my dad, have a different relationship with their dad, and can, like, talk about, you know, how they understand God as Father in that context. So, yeah, it's a really beautiful thing, and I'm super grateful for it.
Yeah, I love that. So, you know, you mentioned, you know, being a part of ministry in mm-hmm. high school, and I think that a lot of young Christians feel pressure to pursue ministry vocationally.
Yeah.
And I know that something that you wrestled with a little bit was, and I mean, you know, that's something I wrestled with too, of, like, do you pursue seminary? Do you work at your church? Can you still be a faithful Christian and not work in a church?
Yeah.
So what has that been like for you?
Yeah. That's been such a huge struggle of mine, like, ever since I started in that space when I was 15.
Yeah.
And so I think in high school, just the environment I was in, and, like, the church I went to growing up, there was this idea that the best thing you could do with your life is pursue ministry vocationally.
Like, yeah.
And it almost felt like, and not that anyone said this, but it kind of felt like the closest you can get to God
yeah.
is to do this full time, and for this to be your day to day. Something that I think I've learned since then is that there is no, like, everything is ministry.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think there is absolutely a difference between working in a church and working at a corporate firm or something. But as Christians, like, I really believe that everything we do is sacred, and everything we touch is sacred. And if we are in a space where there are people who are hurting, that space automatically becomes a ministerial space.
Yeah.
And so I definitely wrestled with that a lot in high school because I, at the time, was pre-med, since has not worked out.
That's crazy.
Yeah, crazy. And was also wrestling with, like, do I go into, you know, music ministry, like, full-time? And my parents and I, like, argued about it so much. And in hindsight, I really appreciate them, like, being pretty firm on me, like, going to college and getting the degree that I have. Because I think the coolest thing about God is that he doesn't limit himself in what he does through us. So, like, I have a degree in public health, and I still, like, am very involved in my local church and get to do ministry in ways that I never thought I could do, while also, like, now pursuing a graduate degree.
Yeah.
And I think that it took a lot of prayer and asking the Lord, like, what do you want?
Yeah.
And how do you want me to minister to people? And I think the more you grow, I think something that's been really interesting is, like, learning about the spiritual gifts.
Yeah.
Just, like, different gifts people have and how a lot of times people think about those in a church context. But when you start thinking about them in, like, a quote-unquote secular context, a lot of times it looks very different.
Yeah.
But it's the same gift being exercised and the same...
Yes.
It's the same type of ministry that you're able to give to people. Just it looks different. So yeah, that's been definitely, like, a struggle of mine, but I think just that understanding that, like, everything is sacred and everything is ministry has been so important. Now I think words are important. So, like, for me, if somebody's working in a church setting, like, I would say they're doing formal ministry. Like, that's like that is their full-time job. And maybe, like, I am hoping to go into the legal field, and so, like, maybe my ministry will look more informal than somebody who's working in a church. It's still ministry is my, like, belief about that, but I think it's really beautiful that there are people in the body of Christ who are doing ministry in so many different ways, and I think we need that. And I also think if, this is an aside maybe, but, like, I think if everybody who was a Christian decided to work in a church, like, we would have no light in the world. Like, it kind of, I feel like, pigeonholes us into, like, one space that has a lot of light and a lot of salt. But I think with the understanding that we are the salt and light of the earth, like, that requires us to be everywhere and not just in, like, church spaces or ministry spaces.
Yeah. I think that's so good because there are many people in the world that would never step foot into a church.
Yes.
But there are many people that need a lawyer or that go to the doctor or that go to Starbucks or, you know, are doing a million different things. And so, like you're saying, if Christians or if believers are only in the church or are only in Christian coffee shops only in places with these labels, that is neglecting a lot of people who not only, you know, would maybe want to hear the gospel or meet somebody who is walking that out, but they also just want a good coffee.
And,
if you are a barista and you are a Christian, like, the Bible says to do all things as unto the Lord.
Yeah.
So make the best coffee of your life.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you're in an office job, like, have the most integrity.
Yes.
You know, be great at your craft and what you do to where people consider, wow, they're different.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
they're, like, such a relief in my day because I can always count on this person. They're trustworthy. They're kind. They're fun, you know? And so I think that it's such a special opportunity to be a Christian outside of the church because you get to interact with a completely different set of people and you get to learn so much just from those individuals.
Yeah.
And at my internship last summer, there was a pastor and he was talking about how he felt called to ministry at a young age, which I kind of also, I don't really know how I feel about that terminology. Yes, because
I feel you.
I feel like it can be a bit problematic or leave people confused. And just the turn of events in his life, he was working at some type of factory or warehouse, and he was very frustrated because he felt so sure, this is what I'm called to do. I'm supposed to be a pastor. Yeah. And he wasn't able to kind of break into that space. And then as he was praying about it, he realized, or, you know, the Holy Spirit kind of challenged him with, why do you need to be in a church to be a pastor?
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. he ended up having a coworker that he shared the gospel with and would answer a lot of theological questions. They would get into these really deep conversations. And his coworker ended up going to a church consistently and then ended up giving his life to Christ. Yeah. And I think was baptized. And that is such a powerful story.
Yeah.
Because truly, you don't have to have the title pastor. You don't have to be in the church to have an impact for the gospel. And even if he didn't share the gospel with anyone, or even if he didn't see fruit out of that relationship, it still mattered, and it can still be used by God.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I think that's so interesting because something that I've always thought about too is how, like, the whole idea of, like, being called to ministry has always just, I agree with you, like, rubbed me, like, a certain type of way, because I think the older I get, I'm realizing that, like, Christians all have the same calling.
Yeah.
And it is to go into the world and make disciples, like, of all nations.
Yeah.
Baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit. But what is different, and what we can be called to different things, we can be called to different assignments.
Yeah.
Like, places that we are, or I think about all the time how, like, just for example, like, in the music space, right? Like, you could be called to, or you could be, like, feel like you are meant to be a musician, but, like, the assignment you might have is being in a totally not affiliated with faith band and going and giving to, like, going on tours. And your assignment 5 years later could be working at a church.
Yeah.
And it's going to be changing. And I think, like, having the perspective that, like, my calling stays the same no matter what.
Yeah.
My assignment might be different. Like, where God has me right now might be different, or maybe not what I envisioned, but that doesn't really change my calling.
Yeah.
If that makes
that's
sense.
That's so good.
But yeah.
Yeah. I've been reading this book. It's called Garden City by John Mark Comer.
Yes,
and
I've
it's so good. And it's very relevant to what we're talking about, if anyone's interested. But I read this line last night, and he was talking about Christian music and Christian art.
Yeah.
And how those labels can be problematic, because nothing inherently makes a piece of art Christian art.
Yes.
And he said, because a canvas cannot be filled by the Holy Spirit of God. Only the painter can.
Yeah.
And I was like, that is so good. That is so true.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Christian music, like, a song can't be glorified to God in itself, but the singer can, or the composer can.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really challenging to consider how what you bring to the place that you're called to.
Yeah.
And it may not be the product of your work that is glorifying to God, but you can be.
Yeah.
And, you know, I work in a somewhat secular space.
Yeah.
It's a, you know, mission-centered organization, but that doesn't mean that everybody subscribes to
the
mission.
Yeah.
And so in some of my work, that's not always going to be the outcome of what I'm doing. I'm not always going to be raising money to something that directly impacts the church or the faith whatever. But the way that I communicate with somebody, the relationship I build with them, you know, the way that I steward the gifts and the opportunities that God has blessed me with in that interaction can most definitely be glorifying to God.
Absolutely.
Even if it's not tangible in that same way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think that honestly, like, the same concept goes for people who, like, don't subscribe to a faith too, is like, I feel like I see so many people feeling frustrated about a season of life they're in.
Yeah.
And, but there's, like, always purpose in what you're doing.
Yeah.
And, like, whether, like, there have been seasons of my life where I'm like, God, like, why am I doing this right now? Like, I don't see an outcome. Like, this isn't, maybe it's not developing me professionally the, like, way I want it to be developed. But, like, I look back and I'm like, oh, but that relationship that I had with that one coworker, like, that, I still think about that. And yeah. that meant so much to me. And there's purpose in, like, truly every season of life. And sometimes it takes a long time to look back and be like, oh, that's what that was for. Like, yeah. okay, got it. But yeah, I think I see so many people who get kind of stuck in the, like, what am I doing? Like, or it feels mundane.
Yeah.
Or, like, even I think something I'm learning, like, in my 20s is that, like, people have jobs that they don't like.
Yeah.
And, like, and that's actually, like, way more normal than what we think. And it's great to have a job that you love and you love waking up to go to. But I was, like, some people have a job in HR. And yeah. they don't really feel passionately about human resources. But, like, they do their best at their job. And that is what is their worship. And that's what's glorifying yeah. to God. And how they interact with people is what's glorifying to God. And they are able to fill their lives in other ways with things yeah. that fill their cup.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know Anita at our
yes.
church?
Yeah, yeah.
I love that queen.
Yeah.
Hey,
love her.
Hey, Anita, if you're listening. She is the most godly person I've ever met. She loves the Lord yeah. so much, spends so much time in prayer. I will be 50 years old and know that Anita is somewhere praying for me because
yes.
yep. she is just that faithful.
Yeah.
And she's very honest. If she works at a bank and it's not like,
yeah,
you know, her passion, but she is like complete and content in her relationship with God, has a wonderful relationship with the church, serves so faithfully, and she has her job during the day, and that's what
yeah.
pays her bills. And I'm sure she's great at it, and I'm sure that she has wonderful relationships with her coworkers, but at least for the time being, like, that's not her
yeah.
end goal, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good perspective to have, especially when you're in your 20s, because the reality is you're not going to get your dream job right away. And
yeah.
it's so hard because now we're at the age where, like, there's a Cardinals player who's a year younger than me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, ouch.
Like,
or like,
you are making so much money.
Yeah.
And living your dream.
Yeah. yeah. Or like, there's Olympians our age.
Yes.
Or even in the age of social media, you see so many people that just have these very fun, kind of carefree
lives.
I mean,
yeah,
obviously
yeah.
it's really hard to be a professional baseball player. Don't want to diss on Jordan Walker. Love you, King. But it can be just discouraging to think
yeah.
like, oh, like, people my age are doing these crazy, amazing things and I'm just sitting here in this office job. But the reality is that getting the dream job or, you know, finding more fulfillment in that way, it takes time.
Yeah.
And a lot of my coworkers, I'm by far the youngest and they've been in their field for decades, like
yeah.
20.
Yeah.
I have one coworker who's been at the university for 30 years.
Wow.
But he didn't get to where he was on his first day. It takes
yeah.
a lot of time.
Yeah.
And in the age of instant gratification, that's just not something that I personally
yeah.
want to deal with.
Yeah.
But that's where I think that understanding the deeper calling and purpose behind that is so powerful, because there's this verse in Luke 16 that says, those who are faithful in little are faithful
yes.
much.
Yeah.
And so when you're
yep.
faithful to these little tasks in front of you, even if that's like sending an email or updating a spreadsheet
yeah. Yeah.
or going to a meeting or kind of putting in the time at your job currently, the Lord will honor that
yeah.
and it will prepare you for the larger roles in your life, whether that's in a job, whether that's
yeah.
as a parent, as a mentor, whatever it is, being faithful to the thing in front of you has such a high return on investment
yeah,
down the line,
yeah.
you know?
And I think the coolest thing about, like, you're talking about Anita is, like, I think a lot of it goes back to, like, how you view your identity.
Yes, yes.
Because, like, so many times, or I do this all the time, people are like, oh, like, what's your story? And I'm like, oh, well, I'm a student, like, I'm going to law school, I grew up in da-da-da-da, and so on and so forth. And, like, when I talk to people like Anita, I'm like, I don't even, like, I didn't know what she did
yeah.
so recently, because it was such a small, like,
that is so
seemingly insignificant part of her life. And obviously it takes up, you know, 40 plus hours every week, but, like, the purpose and the, like, identity that we feel like we have in what we do,
yeah,
as opposed to, like, who we actually are. And I think that you're so right. Like, I think when you have the perspective that, like, everything you're doing is meaningful for some reason and for some season, that points to, like, a secureness in ourselves and, for me, like, in the Lord of, like, what is happening in my life, as opposed to, like, a security in this job that could be fleeting.
Yeah.
Or, like, this person that could be fleeting, or this title, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So
this has
yeah.
been interesting for me, especially working in human resources and working with people that are in the interview process, mm-hmm. I didn't realize how often people get laid off.
Yeah.
It's very common in the corporate world to get laid off from a job due to numerous reasons. And as I was experiencing that, I just thought, wow, that just goes to show how important it is not to put your identity in your job.
Yeah.
Because you can be at a company for 20, 30 years, and it could be gone the next day for whatever reason. You know, companies close, companies go bankrupt, all the things. And so, yeah, that is true. I honestly didn't know what Anita did either until, like, I probably knew her for, like, 3 months, because that wasn't, in her opinion, the most important thing about her.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that for most of us, your job is not the most important thing about you.
Yeah.
And I feel like that can be discouraging when you spend so much time doing it. I feel like that's always a huge adjustment to people post-grad, or even when you get your first internship, is how much time in the day that you're doing your job.
Yeah.
But I think it's a way to, like, practically deal with that is finding those pockets in the day to, like, reflect and to, like, take that time with the Lord, whether just in prayer or even just, like, a little doodle journal on a piece of paper in front of you of kind of centering yourself and getting back down to earth.
Yeah. There's another book that anybody's looking for recs, called, it's tiny. It's called The Practice of the Presence of God. And it's like a tiny book because it's adapted from this monk, actually.
I think I've heard of this. Yes. Is it Brother Lawrence?
Okay, cool. And he wrote, like, a bunch of reflections and journals in, like, a type of English that I probably would be, like, too dumb to read. But it's been adapted into this, like, tiny, like, probably, like, 5x5-inch book. And literally most of the book is about, like, finding pockets of your day to pray and to invite the Lord into your life. And his job was washing dishes.
Yeah.
Like, his literal job in his monastery was washing dishes. And he, like, talks about what it looks like to talk to God about washing his dishes.
Yeah.
That he was assigned to for that day. And I was like, that's not, especially in this conversation, like, washing dishes is not directly ministry.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it is literally just cleaning something. But, like, your perspective on it and how you invite God into your day and into your work, in my, like, experience, like, dramatically changes how you view it.
Yeah.
And, like, he found so much fulfillment washing dishes. And he has, like, he has just a bunch of banger quotes in that book. But, like, so many of them are just, like, this is how I'm inviting God into the present.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times, especially with jobs, like, there's so much pressure about, like, climbing a ladder or, like, where is this going to get me?
Yeah.
And as somebody who, again, like, going to therapy, talking about, like, my anxiety around the future, like, it's been such a great exercise and difficult exercise to be like, okay, like, how can I just invite the Lord into right now? And not think about the future and just trust that, like, the assignment I'm doing right now is worth pouring the best that I can do into it. So I think that's, like, really helped me as well. You can borrow the book if you want.
That's great. Yeah. And that's one thing I've been thinking about a lot recently. I've been listening to this song called One More Day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been very challenging to me of, the Bible says, do not worry about the future, or do not worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow has enough worry
sufficient
of itself.
Sufficient for today are its troubles.
Exactly. Yeah. And so it's so easy for me to think, okay, where do I want to be at this time next year? Where do I want to be? One of my coworkers just celebrated his 17th anniversary. He started working here out of college, like, kind of the same time I did. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, what would that be like for, and it's just like, no, because you truly don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. And so focus on today. And I don't think there's anything wrong with having visions or plans or intentions for the future. Yeah. But if you idolize those things to the point where you're worrying about it, that's where the sin is. You know, it says don't worry about tomorrow. You can consider tomorrow.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But when it gets to the point of worry, I feel like that's where I have some self conviction, I guess, of, okay, this is where I need to tap out.
Yeah.
But something I also want to ask you about is, to those who don't know, Roland was the Student Government Association president of St. Louis University. Quite impressive.
Wow.
But that is a space where you are working with a very diverse group of people, and you're a leader in that way. So how did you navigate that, especially having integrity and being true to yourself, while also being, like, perceptive and open to many different walks of people?
Yeah. Well, I think for context, like, I did not... Before I ran for that position, I was going to quit, like, doing student government as a whole. And I was really just frustrated with, like, the quote-unquote, like, system and, like, how it was running and all this stuff. And somebody was like, well, then, okay, like, do something about it. And I felt so much imposter syndrome in that role. Like, especially in the beginning, a lot of it is, like, meetings with adults, which, like, technically you're above 18, you're an adult, whatever, but, like,
it's people, not the same thing.
Not the same thing. Like, I was meeting with people that I had no business being in a room with, and I was like, this is crazy. And I think what's really interesting, and I actually recently wrote a admissions essay about this for law school, was something that I used to really complain about to God was being an only child. Like, I...
So real.
...hated being an only child. And I... Like, I'm such an extrovert, and I love talking to people. And I would sit at so many tables when I was younger, just, like, me and my parents and, like, random dinner guests we had. And I was just, like... My parents... I love this about them. We're always like, no, like, sit with us. Like, don't just, like, go to your room, whatever. And what I hated about, like, that experience when I was little, I honestly think was, like... the biggest thing that helped me in this role, because I was in rooms where I was the only person below the age of like 30.
Yeah.
And it was like this cool moment of being like, okay, God, like, you know, this aspect of my family dynamic that I didn't really appreciate, like, has become such a powerful tool.
That's so good.
And just like the way the Lord was like preparing me and equipped me to just talk to adults.
Yeah.
Like that was it. And I think the biggest thing I've learned like through that experience and just other leadership experiences is how everything you do is inherently relational.
Yeah.
Like I think that like there's obviously so much value to like your ability to organize and your ability to read or speak or whatever. But like, at the end of the day, especially in a role like that one, where, like, a lot of it was, like, here's a problem, how do we find a solution? Here's an issue or a concern, like, how do we rectify this? Like, a lot of it started with just building trust and building relationships with people. And there were a lot of rooms where I was, like, I don't know how to approach this with this person. And genuinely, like... I think I would literally pray before every meeting because I was like, I don't know, like, what the heck I'm doing. Like, I really don't.
Yeah.
And the best thing that I learned was just, like, walking into a room and being like, okay, like, how long have you been here? What do you do? What do you love about... Like, starting with those things, I think really amplified the amount of work I was able to do with people, which I think was so cool. And I think that... Like, I got to work with so many different types of people and address a lot of, you know, really big issues and again, be in rooms that I was like, what's happening? But getting to know people's stories, I think, was, like, such a vital part of that. And, yeah, just, like, seeing all these, like, tiny ways, like, the Lord was equipping me to do that.
Yeah.
Like, all the imposter syndrome that I felt, like, I feel like one by one, every insecurity I had, God was like, I prepared you for this.
Yeah.
Like... Or if, like, there isn't, like, an explicit connection between something that happened that you feel like I prepared you for, like, you might fail. Like, I had also conversations where I was like, oh, that was a flop. Like, we got nothing
done. I fumbled.
Yes, yeah, I fumbled that. And the, like, humility that I think I learned in, like, accepting that, okay, that didn't go well, and I'm going to have to try again, and I'm going to have to tell people, like, I didn't do that the way that, like, you'd asked me to, like, stuff like that. It was a really big journey of humility, I think, and just, like, allowing God to really just take the wheels of every conversation I had and, like, kind of learning that dependence. So,
yeah. That is so interesting because I'm the same way as an only child.
Yeah.
And my family used to tease me as a kid and call me a professional luncher because I was always going out to lunch with my family or other adults.
Yeah.
And I do resonate with that, of how I do feel like I'm more comfortable in relationships with adults now, even though I technically am an adult.
But, like, adult.
Yeah, but I also feel like as an only child, I struggle with being selfish. Not because I'm trying to be or I'm, like, very self-absorbed, but because I'm so used to really only thinking about myself. Because I didn't have to navigate a sibling or splitting time between my parents with other people in my household or things like that. Yeah. And so I feel like in the workforce or, like, more professional settings, I would get almost offended when people didn't ask me questions about myself. Because I was so used to talking about myself.
Yeah.
Just growing up as the only child in a room full of adults. People are just inherently nicer and like, oh, like, what do you do? Yeah. Like, are you in school? Like, stuff like that. And so that's something, like, that's I've had to work on just in my own personality and in my own interactions with people. But I think I've really grown a lot as a listener, and the Lord has, like, changed my heart to desire to hear other people's stories rather than telling my own.
Yeah.
And especially going back to what we were saying in the beginning, where people are going to come in with different opinions on certain topics because of their experiences.
Yeah.
You can't learn from them or even attempt to change their mind if you don't understand the depth behind their opinion based on their experience in their life.
Yes.
And so being able to just listen to people and hear them and ask questions. And when you think of something that you're like, wait, that's really interesting, ask them a follow-up question and ask them more about it. I feel like that's been really helpful for me, especially in my, like, current line of work, building trust with people and just getting to understand their intentions and their motivations better is just by listening. And so that's, like, embarrassing for me to say, because I don't want to be like, I'm a bad listener and I only want to talk about myself.
No, I completely feel that.
But I think I mean, it was so helpful for me to, like, recognize that weakness. And again, it wasn't coming out of a place of, like, malice. Like, it just kind of was how,
like, habit.
My life was.
Yeah.
But being willing to say, okay, I need to work on that and I need to change that has, like, helped me so much.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, like, one of the best pieces of advice I've had about, like, how to build trust with people and just relationships was from one of my high school teachers who taught, like, I went to a Christian high school, so it was, like, a theology class. And he said that, like, when anybody says something that you, like, tilt your head at, or you're like, what? Like, the first, like, train yourself so that the first thing you say is, help me understand, blank.
Yeah.
And, like, I found, like, those three words so helpful.
Yeah.
In my experience in leadership, and even now, like, even when I talk to people who I disagree with on faith or politics or, like, literally anything, just being like, okay, help me understand why you feel that way, or, like, what has led you to that conclusion. Because 9 times out of 10, the understanding and the backing behind why they think that is something that's actually very relatable to me. Like, it's like, it's something that I can resonate with, and I think the Lord has really grown my empathy and, again, my listening skills and, like, humility through that, because I'm like, oh, like, we're not that different. And if I go by just, like, what you said initially and don't ask a follow-up, I think there's a tendency for, like, me at least to, like, have pride about my stance or where I stand or something, as opposed to just, like, those three words, I feel like, offer up so much room to breathe and, like, just explain, like, more about you and why you think the way that you do. So, yeah, I think that's been, it's been so helpful.
Yeah, I think so often, especially when it comes to really divisive topics, where people disagree, you really value the same thing.
Yes.
Like, it all boils down to a value of health, liberty.
Yes.
Whatever it may be, but how that is executed looks differently for two different people.
Yeah, yeah.
And my dad's in sales, and so he's, like, the king of finding, like, a connection point.
Yes, yeah.
You know, he's from St. Louis, typical, what high school did you go to? Like, Cardinals fan, like,
there
all that
go.
Stuff.
Yeah.
But I feel like I watched him do that so much when I was younger that I'm a little bit more keen to it now, where when you kind of break through that surface level dissension, where are we the same? And most often it's you value the exact same thing.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you can that helps you to understand them more.
Yeah.
And so I think I'm learning just in life, it's not always going to be about changing people's minds or getting them to see your perspective. It's just really about listening and understanding.
Yeah.
And so I think especially for a young person in their 20s, there's going to be a lot of you know, workplace banter, a lot of conversations between your friends, especially when you're at different stages of life, that can bring up those feelings of frustration or feeling like misunderstood.
Yeah.
And I think not taking those things too personal and seeking to understand has really helped me in some of those moments.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously you're preaching to yourself because you're in your early 20s, but what is just some general advice that you would have for a person kind of entering this new chapter of life, whether that's graduating college or starting a new job or moving away from home? I know that you've done that too.
Yeah. I think actually somebody told me this recently and I like had never had the words for it, but I think this is really helpful, is to like build community intentionally. And what I mean by that is like, I think for me, the very recent transition out of college has brought up like so many like questions about what relationships with people who I like were in my immediate community look like moving forward. So like even like moving from home to college, there was like a shift in how my friendships were for my hometown friends. And so like I know that there are people I will always have in my life and I will always tell the important things to, but they're not in the day-to-day.
Yeah.
And so like right now I feel like a lot of what I'm doing mentally is like building basically three pockets of communities or like friendships, which is like the life friends who are like, I will always go to you with like important things and you always kind of like have my back.
Yeah.
The day-to-day people, which is like my roommate or like people who are in St. Louis who I see often. And then also like the other pocket is like coworkers and people you interact with. Like maybe it's not a super deep friendship. Maybe you don't like do life together in any way or they don't really know that much about you, but like having people in all three of those different pockets I think are super important. I think for me something that has taken a lot of humility and like, or like the Lord has humbled me in this way, I'll say, is like I think being an only child and again having those interactions with adults a lot, I feel like I thought I knew a lot about adulthood. And like, I was like, oh, I wasn't desiring relationships with people older than me because I was like, oh, I've grown up with people older than me my entire life. And the most helpful thing that I think I've been given in this season is like people who are very informal mentors.
Yeah.
Like who are maybe like a couple years ahead of me, like age wise or like in a different season of life. People who are like in their 60s.
Yeah.
Or like even people like you who are like just the next step. Like you're working, you're like what, 2 years older than me or something.
It doesn't feel like that.
I know. We're so insane.
We're so insane. I mean, I'm just a year older than you in school.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So like even just that, like who graduated before me and like learning from that experience and not just making my community people who are my age.
Yeah. Or like self-centered.
Yes. Yeah. Or like, or how can they serve me? Like, I feel like for me, that's looked like, okay, how can I, like, were there spaces where like I can pour into someone else's life and also get poured into by somebody else? So like, and people who are like in similar, like for me right now, I'm like, okay, maybe it's not the most helpful thing for like my closest mentor to be somebody who's married.
Yeah.
Because like I'm not in that season of my life right now. And so like when I am struggling with singleness or like whatever, like having somebody who has experienced that and has lived a life that is full of content in that has been super important for me. And also having people who are parents and who are married as part of like a community of people who I go to with questions about family or other things too. So I think those two things are really huge. Like build your community, your circle.
Yeah.
Accept that your friendships are going to look different.
Yes. Yes.
Moving forward. Like people are getting married and having kids and moving and it is insane. And then also like be really intentional about seeking out people who are older than you. And especially with people who for me are like in their 60s, like I do have to remind myself that there is a generational difference. Yeah. Like, okay, there are things that, like, you know, a lot of wisdom in it, and they look different for our generation. And so, like, holding that with for what it is, but there's so much wisdom in people who are older than us and who know more in so many aspects, like, spiritually, financially. I've, like, found myself so much being, like, how do I manage my money and my grocery bills and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I found a lot of fruit in, like, those types of relationships.
Yeah, sure. That's so good. I think that's so helpful because, especially if you're at, you know, a four-year university, you're used to living around all of your close friends.
Yeah.
And then you graduate, and all of a sudden, there's this huge scatter. And some people are still in the town that you're in. Some people are across the country.
Yeah.
And so the people that you were the closest with, that might not be practical in this time, or it's just harder to, like, prioritize relationships, especially when you're navigating, like, a new schedule and everything.
Yeah.
And so I often hear people talk about that, even if you look at the life of Jesus, he had his three, like, James, John, and Peter.
Yeah.
The 12, his disciples, and then the crowd. So kind of the same, like, three-tier cake that you kind of reference.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you have, like, kind of those three really close people in your life. And sometimes those, like, interchange.
Yes.
Based on
100%.
Proximity, based on, like, stage. Like you're saying, you could be really close with someone at this one time, but then they move or they get married. And so your relationship looks a little bit different. And that doesn't mean it's like that way forever. Like, it's a very dynamic process, I feel like. But I think having some type of outline of that in your head helps you to prioritize your relationships.
Yeah.
And for me, when something like happens to me, I have to call like at least like seven people to like explain it.
100%. Yes.
And then I get very convicted of, okay, was that necessary? Or like, was I just kind of seeking attention
or validation or something?
Exactly. Yeah. And so that challenges me to think, okay, who do I actually want to talk to about this that is going to encourage me, that's going to build me up, that's going to speak life into me?
Yeah.
Who are like other friends that like I have fun with and I like make memories with and we have a good time, but if I really need something, I don't know if I would get my advice from them or maybe not all the time.
Yeah.
So I think that understanding that's really helpful. And I love how you also brought up including different generations in that too, because I think that we look to, or at least for me, like my whole algorithm is just people my age.
Yeah.
And so it really narrows your worldview and narrows the type of wisdom that you get when you're only speaking to people that are like you.
Yeah.
But it's so powerful, I think, to have conversation with people that have lived a very different life than you.
Yeah.
Because they can see things from a very different perspective, and they can also speak things from experience down the road that people your age just can't. So I stay calling my grandpa about my 401k.
Yeah.
Like, what do I do about this situation?
Yeah. I think, like, genuinely one of the, like, most, like, influential experiences I've had in my life was going to a Bible study at our church where, like, for a while I was the youngest person in there by, like, 30 or 40 years.
Yeah.
And I think even, like, one of the coolest things is I remember asking somebody, I was like, I was telling them about something that I was experiencing that was just really, like, a hard transition in my life. And the woman I was talking to, she's, I think, like, 65. And she was, like, so sure of how okay it was going to be.
Yeah.
And I literally I hope one day I'm this sure.
Yeah.
And she literally looked at me and she was like, when you've been, like, walking with Jesus and in this life for as long as I have, like, you've seen over and over again how these things that felt so massive in the moment, like, she was like, feel all of those things, but, like the Lord has constantly carried me, and, and I'm in your life to tell you that he's going to do the same thing for you. And so, like, having people like that where I'm like, okay, like, if you have been through what you've been through and you are still standing, like, I will be okay. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and, and, like, I think that has been so, so cool for me. Or even, like, in, like, a group setting when we would talk about things, like, the perspective that they had, I was just like, where are you getting that? Like, how do you know that? Or, I think one of the other coolest things is, like, the humility that a lot of older people have in their age to still be learning.
Yeah.
It's something that I, like, really strive to have. Like, I'm like, okay, when I'm 80, I still want to be, like, trying to learn as much about theology or the law or like whatever as when I'm 21 years old. So like always keeping that attitude, I think like learning that from generations above us is so important.
Yeah, that's so good. I remember I brought a friend to church and it was a different church, but it was a very older congregation.
Yeah.
And they were singing Goodness of God, and my friend had been through some really hard things in their life, and so I was kind of thinking to myself, I wonder if this song is almost offensive or uncomfortable for them to hearing, you know, all my life God has been good, when they probably didn't feel like that.
Yeah.
But then I was looking around, and there are so many like men and women in their 70s and their 80s that are like hands lifted high proclaiming like, all my life God has been faithful, and I will sing of the goodness of God.
Yeah.
And it was just such a testimony that people that have been through the unimaginable can still like lift their hands and just praise God for how good he is.
Yes,
and so that was absolutely encouraging to me of, you know, I hope that they get there one day. I hope that I get there one day.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for, like I said, all of your wisdom. And it doesn't come naturally. I think it shows your intention of seeking it out, whether that be in your prayer life or whether that be being intentional of, you know, creating relationships with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very inspiring to me. And I hope that, like, if somebody gets one thing from this, it's to just go out and meet somebody new.
Yeah.
And, like, when I just kind of am, like, quickly reflecting on some of the things we talked about, this conversation is, like, so rude. Like, we just, like...
and bouncing around.
Yeah, I feel like it, like, a lot of the themes are, like, so true to who you are. And the things that come to mind when I think about you, of just being so open-minded, yet so convicted and fun. So...
I try.
Thank you for sharing this time with us.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of the Quarter Life Queen podcast. Details about our guest, as well as any other information discussed in this episode, will be in the show notes below, so be sure to check it out. And if you have any questions, requests, or anything at all, be sure to email quarterlifequeenpod@gmail.com. Thank you so much, and you'll hear from me in next week's episode.